This is Purple Radio on demand.
Hello and welcome to WhoSock Podcasts. I'm Harry and I'm joined by
Bertie,
Ollie,
and Louis.
You know, Ollie, you went over my thing.
Today we're talking about Remembrance of the Daleks and Boomtown, and this is your spoiler warning for any media ever created.
You've covered it.
Yeah, I think that covers everything.
Yeah, I think everything does, in fact, cover everything.
So, Remembrance of the Daleks. The Seventh Doctor and Ace find themselves in London, 1963, where the Doctor's travels first began. But when two warring factions of Daleks show up, can the Doctor and Ace save the Earth from being caught in the crossfire and prevent them from obtaining the Hand of Omega, a devastating weapon capable of manipulating the life cycles of stars? Buck, 2024.
I'm
glad that we're properly citating.
Better citations than my disc currently.
Yay.
Not mine. Mine is finished.
Are we talking about our dissertations now?
Oh, I have so much
dissertation
to say.
Talk podcast.
I chose this episode, so you hope I like it. What are your opinions on it?
It was good.
It's probably my favourite episode of Classic Who. Which I feel like, no offence, Louis, I know you love Classic Who, is not a very high bar. I feel like I've just, like, that sacrilege on the WhoSock podcast. I apologise to all offended listeners.
I don't apologise, I agree.
But I do think this episode is really fun. It's got Ace beating up a Dalek with a baseball bat. It's got Daleks fighting each other. It's Davros being a megalomaniac. It's got McCoy being genuinely a little bit scary. It's got like very silly special effects, and it's less racist and sexist than most Classic Who episodes.
Again, not a high bar.
Yeah.
Louis, what are your thoughts?
This is an anniversary special and it's absolutely amazing. But
isn't technically Silver Nemesis the anniversary
yes
special?
Yes and no. Technically Silver Nemesis was, I think, broadcast, but the fact that Remembrance is the 25th season, it's the opening, and it's actually set literally the day after the Doctor and Susan and the two other teachers left. It's so amazing, particularly like you got the reference to, and there's a new science fiction show, dot, and then they cut it off.
Yeah.
There's the French Revolution book. There's the feeling of 60s iconography and stuff. I think it is superb.
I love it.
And it's a Dalek story.
Yeah.
And it's really good. And like this references to Spyridon, and you got Michael Sheard who's in Doctor Who. Like there's so much love within this story that there isn't really much you can improve on, I'd say, with a few key things.
And I think the whole, like, the references to an unearthly child, they don't feel like they're shoehorned in. That is just the setting for the plot, and it makes sense that that's relevant because the Doctor left the Hand of Omega behind, like, when he left Earth. Like, it makes sense. It doesn't feel shoehorned in.
This could have been in the episode. I'm not going to lie, it's a bit hard to focus on said episode. Why did the Doctor leave the hand there? Did he just forget? Like, he forgot his granddaughter at one point. Like, it would be with...
Well, this bleeds into the Cartmel Master Plan, a.k.a. making the Doctor the reincarnation of one of the founding members of Gallifrey. There's a certain phrase that he says that we had trouble with the prototype. And then Ace goes, oh, you mean they? And the Doctor goes, ah, yes. The reason why the Doctor has the Hand of Omega is most likely because he just had it.
Yeah, but why did he leave it?
Yeah, and why did he choose Earth to leave it?
I don't know. It's,
why not, like, keep it on the TARDIS? Like, surely Bestie has, like, a safe or something
there
in
was
there?
An extended media thing that the Seventh Doctor then gave the Hand of Omega after it destroyed after it destroyed Skaro to the First Doctor. So it's in a sort of loop. But that doesn't really make sense.
No, because it was supposed to be created by Omega.
When did he program it to destroy Skaro? Was it did that happen in the episode, or has that already been done? Because
it would imply the Doctor knew about Skaro before.
Yeah,
but the thing is, the Doctor didn't know what the Daleks were before the episode of the Daleks, so he must have programmed. Thing is, he had interactions with the Hand of Omega during the episode, so I assume he commanded it at that point.
There's another one within this Cartman Master Plan thing called Lung Barrow, where essentially you got a Doctor as we know him, just sort of wandering around Gallifrey, and there's this big box following around, and that's meant to be the Hand of Omega. So in this book, it suggests that the Doctor already knew what the Hand of Omega was, or was already knew it was some sort of dangerous thing. It's interesting seeing the scheming, but you'd have to sort of go into the alternate universe where the Karma Master Plan was actually followed through and Doctor Who wasn't cancelled to actually understand what's going on.
For those of you who don't know what the Karma Master Plan is there anyone here?
I have no clue what's happening.
I thought you might not. So the Cartmel Master Plan, it's sort of the Timeless Child 1.0. In the most derogatory way possible. I mean, I don't know if it would have been actually good if it was pulled to fruition, but I think it would have been a terrible idea, largely for the same reasons as the Timeless Child.
I read Long Barrow, I never liked it. It wasn't really interesting.
Basically, the premise of the plan, as Louis sort of mentioned, was the Doctor, and this is hinted at in a lot of Seventh Doctor episodes, is that the Doctor was one of the founding members of Gallifrey, and there's this whole storyline that they were building up to reveal this. And like, for instance, I think in Silver Nemesis, he says something about being much more than just another Time Lord.
No, that is in
Battlefield.
It's in Remembrance of the Daleks deleted scenes. So the famous scene of the Doctor confronting Davros, that Davros goes, yes, but you're right. Just one ordinary Time Lord, or like just another Time Lord. And then the Doctor goes, I'm far more than...
Yes,
the Doctor's like, I'm not like other girls.
But yeah, like, so that's the idea. He had this big dramatic backstory, but then of course Doctor Who, and that they were building up to, and you can see build up in loads of the episodes. But obviously, because Doctor Who got cancelled, this plan was never followed through. And fortunately, the Doctor, until 2021, was not a special Time Lord.
And then she became the most special derogatory.
Yeah. But I think it's in my mind, I don't know, given the Cartmel Master Plan is not canon because Doctor Who got cancelled and then it didn't get followed up on in New Who, it's funny to think now the Doctor did just have the Hand of Omega. Like, he stole a TARDIS and the Hand of Omega and ran away and just left it on Earth for some reason.
You do already have that hint of, okay, so this is just some random guy who ran off with a super weapon. That raises a lot more questions of one in an earthly child. Like, okay, so he comes, like, literally, when his first scene is coming into the junkyard. Where was he? Was he with the priest just saying, okay, I got this plan. There's some creatures that I haven't met yet, but I don't know about, and going to a planet that I don't know of. But...
also, nope, I've forgotten.
Oh, understandable. Me too, Harry.
I forget everything.
Yeah. Life is rough.
Much like the Doctor with the Hand of Omega.
Yeah.
Maybe he meant to put it on.
Oh, I've remembered.
Yeah. And then you remembered.
So if the Doctor has stolen what is effectively a super weapon, or at the very least a very powerful piece of equipment, why weren't the Time Lords following him a bit more?
That's a good
like
point.
Originally. Because they didn't really care until he called them for help in the war games.
I'm guessing in the case of the Cartmel Master Plan, it would have been like he was one of the founding members, so it was sort of partly his. I don't know, but given the Cartmel Master Plan didn't actually happen, there is no real kind of explanation for that.
Maybe he made a decoy out of paper mache, put it where it was meant to be, and took it, so they never knew it was gone, because the paper mache version of it was there.
But or maybe he just stole it, and like the Time Lords noticed it went missing, but didn't know that it was him who'd stolen it. And they were just like, well, someone's stolen it, we need to find out who it is, but they never worked it out.
I'm trying to reach into the burrows of my mind the actual explanation of what happened in Long Barrow, which tries to explain the Doctor's past, but like,
because
I don't remember.
The Doctor isn't actually the Other. They're like a reincarnation of the Other through looms, which will not be mentioned again on this podcast.
I feel like I have vivid memories of Freya being angry about looms.
Yeah. It really, because
I don't know what looms are.
Nor do I.
It's something to do with Time
Lord
birth.
Eugenics. It's not great.
How is Susan, the Doctor's granddaughter, in a place of looms? Because that doesn't make sense.
I don't know how
and
the looms
what
it works. I can't
he adopted
answer.
Her.
Adopted. And essentially what happens is there's a sort of weird thing in Long Barrow where the First Doctor just like goes somewhere and then Susan appears and goes, oh, grandfather. And so what you've got is that Susan isn't actually the granddaughter of the Doctor. It's the granddaughter of the Other.
Mm.
Which makes it even more weirder, because that means that Susan knows the Doctor's true identity. Not as in, like, the actual name, but, like, the founding member of Gallifrey. It doesn't work. I mean, we've already talked about Susan. Her death.
Also, we see the Doctor stealing the TARDIS in name of the Doctor or whichever one it is.
There's no big box.
He doesn't have a big box following him into it.
Maybe he got the TARDIS and then like materialized it around.
I think it might have been already in the TARDIS. I really can't remember.
But like he was about to steal the TARDIS because Clara got him to steal the right TARDIS.
So maybe she was like, you've got to steal the one with the hand in, bestie.
Yeah,
Clara's
the reason that the hand homie ended up there.
Yeah.
I must say, I'm very glad that the Cartmel Master Plan didn't get followed through on, because I think it would have been a very bad idea, as I've said, for the same reasons that the Tannis Child
is bad.
It's good
for the, I think, sort of little bits of characterization of the Seventh Doctor, that he is very sneaky. He knows more than what's going on. You see that in Ghostlight. I mean, you know, well, a lot more than
what's
going on there.
What do we actually see in Ghostlight? Yeah.
A ghost and some light.
That is it.
Curse Fenric. This one's Silver Nemesis. But I think you're right. Mm. They shouldn't have gone through with it. Just make him evil. Just make him scheming. I like that.
What about the Doctor being half human? Because that was a thing that was teased.
In the TV movie, he just says that he was human on his mother's side, and that's never brought up again.
I think we should bring that back.
No. The hybrid. The hybrid is an example of half stuff. I mean, the whole thing is full of what was it like? Half human, half Dalek, half Time Lord, half Dalek. The thing with me and Maisie, I can't remember. I've never seen season 9 after broadcast.
We watched it last year.
Series. I would only rewatch it if I'm like dragging and screaming into a booth.
And next term, we will be rewatching BBC Class and that season. And that's the schedule for next term.
Amazing. Are you all looking forward to that? Who Sock members?
Email in.
Are you looking forward to Class and Series 9?
Who.society@durham.ac.uk.
Have the other podcasts where we asked people to email in gone out yet?
One of them has. The other one is going to be released this Saturday. And I don't remember how.
I don't think we got any emails.
Please email in.
We're lonely. We have nothing to do. We sit in our rooms checking the WhoSock email every minute.
And the only time we get emails is when Microsoft says this email's undelivered, when Ollie sends out the weekly email. And sometimes Lydia from Purple Radio, shout out to Lydia, putting out our podcasts.
We also got that one. We were a World Health Organization society.
Who?
Which, fair enough.
Yeah, maybe we should have gone for a better name.
I mean, I like Who Society as a name. It's on them if they thought we were World Health Organization.
Could we be Doctor Who Club?
Oh, yeah, I'm going to go to Doctor Who
could
Club.
That could still be World Health Organization Club.
It's always great when there's a headline that says, Who Doctor says this?
Yeah.
You've got some other Who Socks out in different universities called Doc Sock.
Which rhymes. I don't like it.
Who Sock does sound quite...
Yeah. Originally, they were all called, like, Appreciation Society. I mean, the main one is still going, Doctor Who Appreciation Society. But would we imagine us being called that?
It wouldn't fit on
the merch that Ollie will definitely deliver on.
I will deliver on it. I promise, probably.
A politician's answer from Buck.
Back on topic.
Yes.
Now, I'm guessing most of us had seen this before.
No.
I have.
I have better things to do.
Yeah, when I said most, I did mean us three. I kind of knew you hadn't.
Harry!
You mentioned it yesterday. Also, mostly because the thing that I'm going to ask about is the Davros fake-out.
I'd forgotten about that. Yeah,
when did you realise that it wasn't actually Davros?
I did think that creepy kid was Davros. And that led to some unfortunate comments during the episode from several members.
It depends how you watch it, because in the previous story, Davros is there with his gold and white Daleks. And so it seems weird to have essentially Davros working again with the black and grey Daleks.
Oh, is this the first one since...
In Revelation, yeah. Right. So it wouldn't make sense. So I think it would... I think it would perplex you
that it's not actually Davros.
Well, not that, but you'd probably be more confused of like, wait, is that Davros? And then when you see it isn't, you're like, oh, so maybe it's the other one. But I think as well, that scene of the Doctor attacking Davros and unlimited rice pudding is one of the most famous and watched clips. So you'd probably already know who it was.
So, no. The answer to that is no, I didn't. And all I knew going into this episode was on Monday, Ollie was like, oh, bit of a spoiler, Davros. Oh, look, Davros is in... And we made a joke about Davros being in, like, almost every Dalek episode.
I mean, he's in every single Dalek episode since his original one in Classic Who.
So, like, knew Davros was coming, and because I knew that Davros was going to be there, as soon as I saw creepy chair, big helmet, I was like, ah, that's Davros, isn't it?
Yeah.
Gotta be.
I think it is a good twist. I think I sort of forgot it until I saw the chair. Mm. I think it works.
I think it's really funny because I think it's funny when the writers sort of tease you with something like that. They're like, oh, Davros, it's going to be a Davros reveal. No, it's not. But here's a Davros reveal. Like, it reminds me, it feels a bit like Moffat. I feel like Moffat often teases us because he knows he can't, for instance, reveal the Doctor's name, but he'll have the Doctor go to Osgood, oh, my name is Basil. And then the next series, hello, I'm Doctor Who. It's his real name. Like, I love when the writers just sort of mess around a bit and tease us slightly. I think it's in good fun.
I think what makes this story even more superb is that it really hones in on what the Daleks are, and that they are a metaphor for the Nazis and racism and racial hatred. And it is superb in the way the story actually confronts that and brings that message along.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I think the episode doesn't do it in detail, but it does touch on, like, actual human racism. Like, for instance, Ace takes down the no coloured sign, or
the conversation in the cafe. Yeah. Though the Seventh Doctor said, basically paraphrasing, but it felt like the guy was like, oh, like, life's really hard for people of colour in the UK. And the Doctor's like, ah, my problems, bruv, so much bigger. As a white man, my issues are so much bigger.
It's not the best, but it's like, I think it's good that it's at least brought up, and it is brought up as, like, you know, slave trade was bad,
and it's specifically in an episode set during the era that the original series was made in.
Yeah,
so it's also sort of criticizing itself in a way, because some of the earlier Doctor Who episodes are a bit iffy.
And, yeah, putting it kindly.
Yeah, some of them are just straight-up racist.
We watched Tomb of the Cybermen last term, and we had to put a content warning in the podcast because,
we got rated explicit for that podcast, didn't we?
We did,
As we should.
Well, one thing I find interesting about the Seventh Doctor in general is you can see the seeds of the difference between Classic Who and New Who starting to come here.
Yeah.
Because it's much more fast-paced. You've got more overarching plot lines to the Cartmel Master Plan, and the Doctor is more morally ambiguous. Because in Classic Who before, well, up to Peter Davison anyway, the Doctor is always just good. The Sixth Doctor is just...
And then Colin Baker strangles Perry.
The Sixth Doctor, Colin Baker's just bad. But the Seventh Doctor is actually emotionally complicated and ambiguous at times, which is much more like the modern era, and I really, really like that. I think... It's sort of comical, the effects and everything, but I think if you sort of look past it, it is quite scary the way he just sort of talks the Dalek to death. Like, he is genuinely quite intimidating with, like, your entire race is dead, your planet is ashes. He, like, Sylvester McCoy delivers that really sinister. And it's genuinely believable that the Dalek would just, like, self-destruct at that point.
It's, I guess, the second thing in the story that Dalek sort of recreates for a modern audience as well.
And if you all pay your membership fees, we will be able to afford a cameo from Sylvester McCoy, and I promise we will get him to recreate that scene for us.
What other Doctor could do that?
I could see Matt Smith doing that. I see the roots of Matt Smith in that scene, and like the way he defeats the Silence.
Compare, and I know that it's not the best episode, but Sylvester McCoy and the Supreme Dalek in this story, and Dalek Khan and the Tenth Doctor in Daleks in Manhattan. There's that similar thing of, you are the only one left.
It's interesting, though, the difference between the Dalek in this story, like, the Doctor's trying to get its self-destruction succeeds, whereas in Evolution of the Daleks, they do it differently, where the Doctor's like, actually, I can help you, and the Dalek's like, nope. Bye. But it is an interesting parallel. I agree. It's an interesting how that is done differently based on what happened in the story.
I think 12 could.
Yes, it would be pulled off very differently, but he definitely could.
Yeah.
I think 9 could, but it would be much more aggressive and much less controlled, and I don't think he would succeed because he wouldn't be... His aggression would make him maybe less intimidating.
Bear in mind that 9 did actually say to the Dalek to kill himself.
Yeah.
Well,
And it eventually does, which but for unrelated reasons.
Yeah, yeah, because of it's impure and it Daleks hates impurity, so boom, die.
Would 10 probably like in the same... I'm not sure.
It would probably be like
I think he'd try to be compassionate.
I think he would in series 2, but not in series 3 or 4. Or he would have done, say, right after he lost Rose, definitely.
And this scene felt very Matt Smith coded.
Yes.
So Matt Smith, I think, could do it. I think 12...
Jodie Whittaker would never.
No. I don't think 14 could.
She'd lock it in a room and say, well,
that's
fixed
Harry,
now.
No.
Or maybe someone else.
She'd
will.
Be like,
someone
we're
else
all
will
capable of the most incredible improvement and change.
Even Daleks.
She gets some therapy.
Another thing
I can fix them.
Where very similar to a modern story is that Ace is very much like a modern companion with actual agency.
Yeah.
It's annoying how okay, obviously Ace is treated with misogyny, it feels like it's a comment on it, but then that's slightly undermined by the fact that the Doctor also tells her to stay behind. But I'm glad at least that the writers had her not actually do that and were like, you know what, she's gonna go off and wander off and do her own thing.
And hit Daleks with a baseball bat.
I love that so much. I love Ace beating up Daleks with a baseball bat. And it's one of my favourite parts of Power of the Doctor is her beating up a Dalek with a baseball bat as a little homage to that.
It's the bit where she runs past one of them and then turns around, gives it a whack, and then carries on running.
It's iconic. It's iconic.
Women's rights and women's wrongs. But here she was in the right.
Very much.
I think all of the cases of the Daleks being killed in this episode are really fun. Because you've got the Doctor going, don't you recognise your mortal enemy? And just throwing Ace's homemade explosives at it. You've got the... you've got Ace with a bazooka. I aim for the Ice Dog.
There's one when they... The Doctor jumps through the ceiling of the shuttlecraft, sees a Dalek, goes like, shut up, man, I'm the Doctor, put the hat over the arse, and then put some fairy lights together. And then sure, man.
They had like £3 left of the budget.
The practical effects in here are bloody amazing, though. I must admit, there's so many explosions.
Yeah.
It's boom week.
It's boom week. Can we talk about the special weapons Dalek?
Best
I love
Dalek
her.
To ever exist.
It was there for like a minute. But it was amazing.
She's everything.
She's
to
beautiful.
Me and more.
We've decided that she has she, her pronouns now.
Yeah, yeah. And she's our, what do we name her?
Weppy.
Weppy.
Weppy, the special weapons darling. We love her.
I love Weppy.
She's beautiful. She's everything and more.
Mm-hmm.
The white and gold Daleks look superb, but I will admit that the black and grey Daleks are a tad wobbly.
They're very wobbly.
I don't know, and I generally don't know why. They seem very.
Is it just because they're older props?
I don't know. They seem too new. I think that's the problem. It does look like someone is there.
It almost looked like they had a bicycle inside them with no stabilizers.
Maybe they
wobbling.
Did.
But it's quite weird because in Revelation you got some sort of weird opposite effect where the black and grey ones are actually quite nice, but the white and gold ones aren't.
As in they're wobbly.
I wouldn't say wobbly, but like you could tell like it was the first story and the eye stalk colour is different and such.
Mm.
But I kind of wish that they. Everything looked good, but of course, because it's
classic Who. Yeah.
Like even the shots with the spaceship can be a bit hit and miss. Like the very first shot,
I think
a pre-title.
I think they're just miss.
Yeah,
they tried their best.
I love them, but they're not good effects. They're very very bad effects. I love them so much.
A for effort.
Yeah, A for effort. Like it's like I love the McCoy era title sequence. It's so bad and so dated, but they've just gone. We have CGI now. Let's go ham with it. And it's beautiful. It's so 80s.
It's interesting how when the Daleks are like appearing through the transmat, you can see sort of inside them.
Yeah,
that's like that.
That's a really clever attention to detail.
Mainly because they are part human Daleks. So they're probably trying to emphasize the actual difference between the sort of the sluggy creature inside and the sort of human elements of Revelation, what was going on there.
Love that they were gay. I loved my Daleks trying to celebrate Pride.
I also love the attention to detail with the fact that the two Daleks like were physically different, because it's all well and good to just go, oh, they're different, therefore they're big on racial purity. But it's interesting they actually, one of them is more like the conventional blob and one has sort of claws and is grafted into the machine. Like, I like that they go into what's actually different about them. Mm. It makes them more interesting and feel more real.
However, I would say this is sort of, again, that continual thing of Daleks fighting Daleks, which has happened way too often within the show.
I think this is the best case of it, though.
I would agree there.
So So how many times have the Daleks been completely destroyed only to then not be?
Well, take the very ending shot of Emperor abandoning bridge, Emperor escaping in the escape pod, and you can actually see the pod escape.
Mm.
That's a bit too much.
Is this the last? This is the last Dalek story of Classic Who, right?
Indeed.
Yes.
It is, yeah.
How do the Daleks go from that to the Time War?
I mean, I like how interestingly you can sort of see the build up to the Time War because Davros talks about wiping away the Time Lords.
Mm. If you look which at I find really interesting. Genesis, it's the Time Lords or CIA trying to wipe out the Dalek race. Resurrection. They're trying to assassinate the High Council of Time Lords. Thankfully not this High Council, but High Council of Time Lords.
I mean, how do they go from literally just Davros alive to a force on the level of the Time War? Also, where does the Emperor come from?
The way I see it is, like, that Dalek ship was, I don't think, all the Daleks. Yeah. I assume there were other Daleks out there in the universe. It's just the ones on that ship were destroyed and the ones on Skaro were destroyed.
Moreover, they were the Imperial Daleks, not the Renegade Daleks.
I assume that the Renegade Daleks all got defeated.
There's something even worse. Skaro being destroyed, but there are many other stories set on Skaro. In particular, one called Magician's Apprentice, which is familiar.
That one
when is that
very specifically that mentions that they've rebuilt it.
Yeah.
Okay, but like, what about the other stories? Within
Asylum of the Daleks. Asylum of the Daleks is the... I assume what it is.
Is
it
Asylum on Skaro?
At the very beginning.
It is.
I thought that was a space... Oh!
At the very, very beginning, first there were the Daleks, and then there was a man who fought them. And it's like a big Dalek statue thing.
Skaro?
And he goes, Skaro, look at the state of it. I assume what it is the physical planet was destroyed, but all of the buildings on it were destroyed. So if you, at the start of Asylum of the Daleks, everything is in ruins. And the Doctor goes, look at the state of it. Not really acknowledging the fact that that's his fault. And then Magician's Apprentice, which familiar, it makes more sense that they rebuilt it if there was a physical planet.
There was a book that basically talked about how when the Daleks invaded in the 22nd century, something that is referenced in this story, that the Daleks find like a library and learn about what happened. So they they find a planet.
This is a real page turner.
How do they turn the pages?
With their little plungers, they just sort of squidge them.
Basically, they find a planet and then transform it into Skaro. So in fact, the Doctor destroyed that planet, not real Skaro. It's this book called War of the Daleks, which tries to explain the apparent contradiction of Skaro being destroyed.
The social construction of Skaro.
So this is kind of like the first part of Trial of the Time Lord as well. They just move a planet and like,
I think that's a little bit unnecessarily
that's what I mean, but
much.
Like,
it makes much more sense to just go, the physical ball of rock was still intact, just everything on it was levelled.
Well, if it was caused by a supernova... There'd be a very fine line between...
I'm not sure if it was a supernova or if it was just...
It does say supernova.
Picked another rock. They just went to another a rock where nobody lived, was like, or where lots of people lived. They probably killed them and said, this is my rock now.
It is not beyond reason that the Daleks would just find another place. I mean, Mondas and Telos for the Cybermen. Both are technically the home planets. They could just pick anywhere. Also, would the Daleks be really bothered? Like, these are creatures of hate and purity.
Yeah.
Oh no, you destroyed my home planet. I'm just going to cry in the corner. Like, they've got
little tears dropping from their eye stalk.
Can I say, there is one scene I want to talk about in this episode that I absolutely love. And as much as the unlimited power, unlimited rice pudding is really, really funny, I also think it's really, really interesting. And I love it for the character of Davros and the character of the Doctor. Because Davros, his whole thing is he is obsessed with power. Everything Davros is about getting as much power as he possibly can. He creates the Daleks so he can become powerful. And, you know, when the Doctor sets up this moral dilemma of, like, what if it was, like, a disease in a vial? He goes, that power would set me up above the gods, so I would do it. Davros is all consumed by needing to be powerful, and the way that the Doctor manipulates him in that scene is really clever, because it feels for a moment, because on first watch I sort of figured it was like the new who often done thing of like, I'm warning you, don't do this, sort of trying to give him a second chance, but you can actually see he's goading him into doing it. And, like, it's the very specific choice of words. It's like, you may enslave the occasional culture, blah, 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 but it won't detract from your own impotence. Like, he specifically calls Davros completely powerless, which is the like that gets to the core of what Davros is. And I find, and it, you know, the Doctor knows this about Davros, and everything he's like, if you watch the speech and listen to everything he's saying, it's making fun of him. It's belittling his power. It's making him seem like just someone who can't do anything. And then he makes it convincing with the, please don't use the hand. And it's just, it's the, I think it's a really, really clever way how they show him goading Davros into using the hand by making him feel powerless. And it's really interesting on how Davros falls right into the trap because he is so singularly obsessed with power, but also how scary and manipulative this Doctor is. I love that scene.
It's the part where one of the people tells him to stop and he just covers the microphone and says, no, I know what I'm doing.
Yeah, exactly.
And there's that line, you tricked me. No, you tricked yourself.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Also, I think of all the ways that Davros has died or to be defeated, this is probably the best.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's clever. One interesting thing is, it's occurred to me, one of the big things of this story is the two factions of Daleks fighting each other. But you could take that out, and the story wouldn't change that much.
Well, that's the thing. The Doctor admitted that I didn't think there would be two factions. It's just that he didn't realise that this was going to be a four-parter, and therefore they had to stretch it out with, like, fighting stuff and, like, the organiser. Was it the associate? The association.
There was a lot of people fighting on behalf of the Daleks.
I don't really mind it, because I think it's really fun, but there is a very much, like, narratively, it's about the Daleks getting the Hand of Omega, and then the thing being, the like, Skaro being destroyed. You don't need to have the renegade Daleks there, but I think it's fun, and I think it's a good backdrop.
If there weren't any renegade Daleks, there wouldn't be any special weapons Dalek.
Yeah.
You got me there.
Don't wish my child out of existence.
I'm not. I want the warring Daleks, though. I think it's wonderful. It would have been nice if they'd had more of a focus, but I don't think this was the episode for it. And to be fair, I've not seen Revelation. Maybe they get more of a focus there.
Don't the renegades just show up
they
at the end?
They do show. It is a Deus Ex Machina. If you remove the Doctor from Revelation of the Daleks, nothing changes. It's just, but that scene at the very end of Revelation is superb because it's basically the renegades turning up and going, right, trial time. You're coming with us. And then Davros goes, ah, but look, it's the Doctor. And the Daleks go, no, it's not. He doesn't look like the Doctor we know. You're coming with us, man. And it was so funny.
So how does Davros escape from them to then magic. Be the Emperor?
Rizzes.
Well,
Davros rizzes his way.
Wait, so
I really can't remember.
Wait, was he being put on trial by the Renegades or the Imperials?
The Renegades. He was the leader of the Imperials.
Yeah. So yeah, that
he met them.
So yeah, somehow. Again. Yeah, somehow he would have escaped the Renegades.
Is that where the rest of his body went?
I
mean, he has it back in New Who, I guess. So.
I assumed his body wasn't gone. He was just in a funky little costume.
To make sure that they didn't try to kill him this time.
I Googled it.
Mm.
But, my source is Google. Mm. So, en route to Skaro, the ship carrying Davros crashed into the planet Lethither?
I'm guessing this is expanded media.
Davros was rescued and set himself up as Professor Vasto.
Extended mist.
This will be some book or audio drama or something.
How does he keep getting away with this?
Those meddling kids.
Literally, there is. I've talked about this before. The Scooby-Doo lines of "You've confounded me for the last time." Ah, Davros, I should have known.
It's very fun and it's very cheesy, and I love it. And like the insult of like, your appearance is as inconstant as your intelligence.
Stunning. 10 out of 10. 8. Left no crumbs.
And I love the mocking of the unlimited vice pudding. What a great line.
I loved how in the Renegade Dalek base, there's the big chair with the Dalek hat thing on it. And then next to it, there's some unsuspicious filing cabinets and a wall that rises up to reveal a map. Like, why did the map need to be hidden of all of that stuff?
The map was very sensitive, Harry.
It's just, I love how dramatic and camp this era of classic was.
The time controller.
It's a plasma ball.
Plasma ball.
Yeah.
I have activated the time controller.
What did that do?
That's just because that's the Daleks' time machine. Because the Daleks have time travel. That's how they get there.
The only sort of...
Because the Daleks exist in the future, so that was they had to travel back to 1963 to get the Hand of Omega, and that's their time.
That's what I think sort of
So did they activate that when they were trying to leave?
They were almost, but just as that moment, the Imperials arrive, and then Ratcliffe took the time controller, therefore they couldn't leave. But I think that might explain the whole Skaro thing, because maybe they were just going toward... Like, the Hand of Omega was traveling through the future as well to... destroy Skaro in the future, but it's something I don't want to talk about.
It is hilarious how, like, I don't know what I was going to say there.
It's just hilarious.
It is hilarious how when you've got the two warring factions of Daleks, these most powerful, dangerous beings in the universe, they're just sitting in place, shooting each other and missing. Like, until beautiful little Weppy comes along, the Imperial Daleks don't hit a single shot.
They're trying their best.
That turns out the special weapons Dalek. It's not a more powerful gun, just the only one that can aim.
Yeah.
The effects of the Dalek shots are actually quite good as well.
Yeah, compared to most Classic Who, it makes me sad how, like, in Classic Who, it's just like, oh, the whole room lines up with some effects. And, like, really early Classic Who, there's not even a laser beam. It's just the, like, a...
They just, like, negative.
Comes out of the...
Yeah. It was in black and white, and they would sort of just do something to show that something was happening.
Yeah.
The fact that you can see the skeleton, I'm not sure if it's the first time, but my God. Yeah. Particularly with the fact that when they shoot the soldier and the soldier goes backwards, you can see the skeleton as like, it's, someone's clearly having a lot of fun in there.
Yeah.
Well, not they're dead, but
In the special effects,
there's a lot of great things going on. Particularly because I said there's lots of practical effects as well, and things explode and boom and.
Whatever. It's for its time and budget, very very impressive special effects, I think.
Have we got anything else to say about this episode? I think time to move on.
I mean, we're 35 minutes in, and I wasn't going to say anything because I'm not leading this podcast, but I think we probably should.
Yeah,
it's just a very good story.
Mm. It is a very good story.
And next up, we've got Boomtown.
Tell us what happens in Boomtown, Harry.
The Ninth Doctor, Rose and Jack stop off in Cardiff to refuel the TARDIS on the Time Rift, but their little pit stop gets sidetracked when they discover Slitheen has become mayor of the town. Is it a town or a city?
Cardiff is a city.
I wasn't sure I can remember if it was Cardiff or just some town in Wales somewhere.
How dare you not remember the best episode of Series 1?
Cardiff is the capital city of Wales.
City!
But I didn't remember that it was in Cardiff.
the Torchwood base in it.
Yeah, I forgot that.
Anyway, and is for some reason building a nuclear power station on the Rift. As Rose and Mickey work through their relationship, the Doctor must grapple with the moral dilemma of returning Blondfell Fotch to her own planet, where she would be executed. Buck 2024.
Turn It In is not going to pick us up, don't worry.
Yeah, it's an episode that I think is underrated. I actually like it.
I agree.
Louis?
Particularly because this is season one and they're just bringing back a villain that they had a few episodes ago. Yeah, why not?
They only had the budget for one costume.
Yeah. Literally, the whole budget saving thing, you can see it a lot within New Who, of just trying to, okay, we've had a bunch of episodes, let's just have one episode that will calm you down before the finale.
And reusing a monster.
Exactly.
It probably didn't.
Series 3 and 4 definitely didn't calm us down before the finales. You know, Nature, Family of Blood, Blink, Utopia, Silence in the Library, Forest of the Dead, Midnight, Turn Left.
I think the whole thing it was a deliberate thing of, oh, well, you think this is going to be the calm before the finale, but oh no, it's the rug under the feet. But I think for the first season.
Yeah, Series 1, 2, and also Series 5 very much do that.
Particularly as well when, of course, like you see the next time trailer and then you see the, like, oh my God, it is that person from the previous one.
I like a filler episode. I'm really sad that, like, media as a whole is getting rid of filler episodes, because I think it shows people's relationships, you get to know the characters better, you get to see how the Doctor is morally, you get to see Jack and how he is morally, and the relationship between Mickey and Rose and how that might affect people's actions. Like, this does a lot to establish the characters, which I think you really, really need when the show is so new.
As a general thing, I prefer episodic shows like Doctor Who to serialised shows like Doctor Who Flux.
correct.
Is that just saying something about Flux, though?
No, but like other serialized yeah. shows as well, I do yeah. prefer the format of episodic shows over serialized ones.
There are also, especially in Tennant's era, some really good either Doctor Light or Companion Light episodes, like Blink, Midnight, and Turn Left. They yeah. are all mm-hmm. very good. And
they're incredible.
Yes. And some have very little episodes. Of some of the main characters.
Mm.
I mean, I don't see anyone reaching for The Lodger or Closing Time as a comparison to that.
But, I mean, I suppose they are Companion Light, aren't they?
Yeah, I mean...
And then, but you've got Craig instead.
I think that comes James down Gordon. To a lot of what people say about Russell T Davies writing characters better than Moffat.
Yeah.
Even though, I guess, did he write any of the...
No.
Moffat wrote Blink, actually. This doesn't make any sense.
I can't remember his name, but the guy who wrote the Craig episodes, he's a transphobe. That's all I remember about him.
That's the only important thing you need to know about the guy, in all honesty.
He said some things.
For our very audio-based format, Louis just mimed pushing that out of the way.
This episode was written by Russell T Davies, I think, so we're good.
Don't look at me.
Part of me feels a bit annoyed that the way that Blonde is characterised, and particularly towards the end, where you see that, oh, she's actually evil all along. The parts where like they try to, I won't say humanise, but to make her more sympathetic.
Mm.
I really wish they went that way, that, hey, maybe she was actually
her name
right.
was Margaret and she was a politician. She deserved her fate. Give me one good Maggie. Go on.
the thing is, I think...
But the fact that she spared someone, I was thinking, oh, maybe they're going with that.
I don't mind that, because I think a lot of them... In my mind, the moral qualm of the episode is like, you know, is it okay for the Doctor to be delivering her to her death, regardless of what she's done in the past? And like, I think the fact that she turns out to be evil doesn't detract from that. And I think that it doesn't detract from the moral dilemma of, like, is it okay to just take her to her death?
But I love the part where it says, can any of you look me in the eye?
Mm.
And is it Mickey?
No, we're
is
autistic.
Mickey, is Mickey the only one who just, like, stares?
No, but he does look away after a bit.
It's also...
They're all autistic kings and queens.
It's a parallel to the death penalty, isn't it?
Yeah, well,
it's like it doesn't...
It's not a parallel, it literally is the death penalty.
I mean, the death penalty, how it is in America, which is... People have done quote-unquote bad things. Does that mean they deserve to die?
Yeah.
And I think it also helps set up the Doctor even more as very morally ambiguous, because, like, with their little not date, when Margaret's like, hey, bestie, you've definitely done the same things because you understand too much.
Mm.
What makes me different from you?
It's interesting the line of, like you occasionally you spare, let someone go, that's how you live with yourself. Only a killer would know that. Russell T Davies, do you have something you need to tell us?
I don't think he'd be admitting it to us.
I'm pretty sure there was a serial killer called Russell Davies at some point in Canada, I think.
Oh.
Hang on.
Because I know someone who's... That
what? Who Harry, why like, would you...
wasn't called Russell because he would have had that name.
Yeah, the Russell murders.
Yeah.
Goodness.
Yeah. The justice system on Raxacorico Falibatorius is very interesting in that they've tried the entire family in their absence and sentenced them all to death.
Yeah.
So the crime that she was being that she would have been executed for wasn't trying to destroy the earth. It was being a Slitheen.
I mean the Slitheens have done terrible things in past, but like it's sort of ambiguous exactly what. Like, it's very conceivable she could have done things like what she was trying to do with the Earth before.
But she, it was very specifically stated that her crime was being a Slitheen.
Yeah.
The one that they were going to execute her for, anyway.
Yeah. Well, I suppose it's like her crime is... I think it's more so her crime is being a killer, but she's a killer because she's a Slitheen, and that's how they're raised.
Didn't they say, oh yeah, my first kill was at age 30?
Which itself is also an interesting thing, because it's like, did she have a choice in what she did?
Which is why I think the ending works, albeit a deus ex machina, which is only there because of the finale.
Yeah, it is a bit of a deus ex machina.
It's look into the heart of the TARDIS. Ooh, what's happening?
And it's there to explain why Rose knew that that would happen in the finale.
It does. I think it's something common with Russell T. Davis writing, and I think it is true even in like the new episodes so far we've had, that I don't think he's very good at solving plots. I think he's very good at creating problems, and he's amazing at writing characters, but he's not good at solving plots.
He's interesting with the foreshadowing, I feel. Like, it has been like very...
Is it foreshadowing, or is it him going, look, look, I've got a plot! Look, there's a plot point over there!
Literally the whole... Imagine there's a ring on the, not a ring, a tooth, a tooth on the table. The hand reaching up
for the giggle. Louis has just knelt down on the floor and mimed picking something up off the table.
I love our visual podcast.
This isn't the first time he's done something like this today either.
Indeed.
Oh dear.
Should we start doing this in a video format?
Mm.
A little live stream.
Just record it on one of our phones.
Yeah.
Have it in the corner. Ask Purple Radio if we can borrow their CCTV.
I will say, I think there's an interesting...
Is there CCTV in here?
Not yet.
Not that I know of.
So.
Oh.
I think that one thing that I think is morally interesting in this episode, and I think it's a shame that it's not touched on, is the returning her to an egg. Surely that effectively is killing her, because you've wiped her mind. You've wiped everything that makes her her.
We've had enough about eggs killing stuff.
Have we?
Have we?
Kill the moon.
Oh, God.
Why did you have to bring that up?
Why would you bring up kill the moon?
You brought it up.
I didn't bring...
did this.
Bonk.
I just mentioned an egg. You just have, like, NARM flashbacks every time you see an egg.
I do. I do. Every time I see an egg. Honestly, I see the shooting in the background.
Me too, bestie.
I'd like to note that this is probably about as, like, on topic a podcast has been.
Well done,
for
Harry.
For a very long time.
I'm proud of you.
I haven't even done very much.
You've been here. Literally.
I think it's
the last time
Bertie
was on track,
enjoys
you were here.
Bringing it off track when it's me or Louis.
Yeah.
And also, it's when Bertie's in charge, it's never going to be on track in the first place.
I respect Harry. I don't know how much I respect you two. I'm like, oh, I'll let Harry have his nice podcast.
I love how the most off-topic we have gone is when discussing how not off-topic we have gone.
Look, I couldn't let you get away with no off-topic.
You don't respect him that much.
No, just more than you do.
Stems beneath you.
STEM is beneath me, correct?
There's so many parts of this episode that are just funny. Like,
yeah.
She's climbing out the window, isn't she, Pop?
I love that line.
And
so
the teleport.
Much.
That must have been so funny to film. Oh my. Just run up and down.
It's RTD writing genuinely really good comedy.
I like that there's like three or four Jack Harknesses. You've got Jack in the ground, Jack in the autopsy mortuary bit, Jack in the hub, and then Jack prior immortality, I think.
What are you talking about?
So
Torchwood lore that none of us
I even know about this. Okay. The fact that because of timelines, there's just so many different
Jacks
hanging around.
Oh, I see what you mean. Oh, so it was in
Cardiff at that time.
It sort of reminds me of, spoilers alert, here's off topic, Back to the Future. There's something like the DeLorean is in the city for like four times, like in four different occasions, because like they're in the mine and they're also sort of in this place. There's an example there.
There could have been three or four Jacks. I can't remember if they dig Jack up and whack him in the mortuary, or if they've done that, but there's also another dead Jack just vibing. Three or four Jacks in Cardiff at the point of that episode.
So
nice.
Is this the only time we ever see the TARDIS being refueled?
Utopia. At the very beginning.
He basically said, there was an earthquake in TARDIS. Not in TARDIS. In Cardiff.
other than that, I don't... It's a little bit weird how the TARDIS... Before this rift was created, it never needed refueling. Mm. Now that there's a rift, it needs refueling. But once the rift is no longer relevant to the plot, it doesn't need refueling anymore.
She's hungry.
Maybe, you know, that's just... The big finish will turn it into a nice little drama of the Doctor's holidays to Cardiff.
To be fair, maybe it is just a case of the Doctor periodically stops off on time rifts, but usually we don't see it because it's not relevant to the plot.
I like the idea of a timey earthquake, though. I think that's very interesting. And that again, it's the whole unintended consequences that the Doctor's actions in episode 3 of the series still lingers on, and we've got to sort of refuel every so often.
Yeah. Yeah. It's interesting.
They try to link Gwen Cooper into this, and as a Gwen hater, it really annoys me.
But of course, this was before the character of Gwen Cooper had been created.
Yeah. Yeah. They tried to link her into, like, you know, Victorian Gwen this episode and her as a character. And it really, really annoys me. Stop. Gwen Cooper is irrelevant. And we need to stop linking her to things.
Yeah, understandable.
Thank you. Thank you for coming to my TED Talk.
Enjoyed your TED Talk. It was a wonderful TED Talk.
Does anyone in the episode question why Jack has the handcuff things?
No, Jack just has things. You know, he has a gun up his butt in the next episode.
Yeah, good point.
I just think, you know, they've lived with him for a period of time. I feel like...
Deadly handcuffs, not a surprise.
No, and it's a quick zap too, so...
Who's sucking a pair of handcuffs? I've seen this before.
Have you?
It was in a podcast, that's what Freya said when she did a proper final podcast, episode 79.
Okay. Oh, I just thought you'd been up to
the
thing.
Why do you know the episode number?
I am the cataloger. I catalogue everything. I'm a ghostlight. I'm the ghostlight guy.
No one knows what you are.
No one knows what I am.
Just thought maybe Louis had other Usopp commitments outside of us. And I was not going to question it.
Anyway,
does anybody have anything else they want to say about Boomtown, or should we move on to questions?
I asked Sam for her rating of this episode. She says yes. And that was Sam's rating of this episode.
What's that rated out of?
Yes.
Yes, as of yes. Yeah. That's the highest possible score.
Yeah, it is. Also the lowest.
Well, I feel like no would be lower. You could have no.
Depends
out
what
of
the
yes.
question was. What was your exact question?
Sam, how do you rate Boomtown?
All right.
Yes.
Okay. So there's space for a no there.
Yeah.
I guess so.
It says like Last Crusade. He chose poorly. Didn't you, Harry? I'm joking.
Louis, your week was awful. Don't bully Harry for his choices. We had to sit through another one episode, Louis. Harry chose good episodes. I chose brilliant episodes. Ollie chose Matt Smith. You chose awfully.
I chose Matt Smith as well.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I chose just Matt Smith.
Well,
and
that's
anyone
all
really
right then.
Like Bells of St. John.
Yeah.
I think Bells of St. John is underrated, but it's definitely worse than the episodes I chose.
You're just a bloody flesh gang.
Which is a good episode.
It's a good episode.
So I think it's probably time to move on to the questions.
Yay.
I don't think so. I'm leaving now. Bye.
Bye, okay. Ollie. Bye, Ollie. You are the most irrelevant member of exec.
Thanks. I've changed my mind. I'm here.
I have returned.
Do I say who's asked the questions?
Yeah.
You can if you want.
Okay.
I usually do, but no one else ever does. Right. So, you know.
Anonymity is key within this
podcast. I'm trying to pick which one to go with.
I just do them in order that they were asked.
I don't really want to do that, though.
Harry said no to you.
It's my podcast.
So Lottie asks, what would you do if a creepy child started following you around with a plasma globe?
Drop kick.
The child or the globe?
Both. I have 2 feet.
I'd be like, hey, you're all right. Can you leave me alone, please?
Probably just say, I think the science fair is that way, and just run away.
What would you do, Harry?
I mean, there's been a real range of responses so far.
You look like a drop kicker.
Ask if they're all right, and if they just keep creepily following me, probably run.
I feel like that kid can run quite fast.
She would skip after you.
Yeah.
Oh, and the required creepy little girl music would start playing, obviously.
Yeah.
Which is interesting. We noticed it's the same music used in this as in...
Impossible Astronaut, Day of the Moon stuff.
I thought you said it was night terrors.
Yeah, no, I said it was Human Nature, Family of Blood, the sister of mine. But I think the thing is, it was...
Is it? Oh, my God.
Yeah, it is. But someone made the connection that it's Ring-a-Ring of Roses.
That makes sense.
That is a really creepy nursery rhyme.
Mm. It's just the universal creepy little girl theme.
Yeah.
Cormac asks, if forced to side with one of the factions of Daleks seen in Remembrance, which would you choose?
The Renegades.
Weppy.
That's the Imperial Daleks. Unfortunately, we're fighting against each other.
Weppy.
Weppy is the one thing that makes me doubt myself, but hear me out. I automatically find myself siding with the Renegade Daleks because they're cool. They're strong, independent women. They want to do their own thing. They're like, screw you, Davros. We don't like you. We're going to exterminate. Because they were the ones who killed or supposedly killed Davros in Genesis. They're doing their own thing. The Imperial Daleks were just created by Davros through Davros' bidding. They're boring.
Weppy.
Weppy is...
Me and Weppy, we start our own team.
We can fix Weppy.
Okay, then I'll be on your team if we can fix Weppy.
I think we can bring Weppy round to the Renegade side.
We can give her a little makeover.
Yeah, she's clearly not had a bath recently. Like, the other Imperial Daleks were all very shiny and she has, like, muck all over her.
Oh, they're not nice to Weppy.
No. See,
I think that's actually canonically true as well.
Oh no.
The radiation from the weapon, like, mutated it, the special weapon's Dalek's brain. More.
So is
the
that other an expanded media?
Probably. The other Daleks don't like it because of this.
Oh.
We can fix Weppy and bring her to the Renegade side.
I'm going Renegade.
Yeah, I... The one downside of the Renegade Daleks is they're very wobbly.
We can fix that too.
It makes them endearing.
I'm talking about the Renegades as a whole, so I'm including Revelation, where they're actually better...
And I mean, we now have Weppy.
Okay, sure, yeah.
Right.
That's a good idea.
I'm glad that we're not imperialists on this podcast.
We solved the Zalek Civil War.
Yeah. Jacob asks, what do you think the Torchwood team were doing while this was all happening?
I have read so much extended media for Torchwood, listened to so much, and read a lot of fan fiction. It's a consensus that Jack puts the hub on lockdown during it. So, like, both fandom and extended media have all somehow, through the Tales of Time, agreed that Jack puts the hub on lockdown because at this point, the Torchwood team is post the massacre, which Alex does in the 2000s when Alex kills everyone and goes, sorry, Jack, can't kill you. Something evil's coming in the 21st century is when it all happens and we're not ready.
Definitely know what all of that means.
The old Torchwood head. He kills everyone because he knows that something evil's coming. And then at this point, we would be Jack, Owen, Toshiko, and Susie. I think, yes.
Is Susie the one who's like leaving in the first episode
and
tries to kill Jack?
Yeah. She's a girl boss. Love Susie. But
very evil.
Well, no, she wasn't. But then she got corrupted by the glove.
Yeah.
The glove had like some mind creepy
powers.
I'm
assuming this glove is from expanded media.
Nope,
no, it's from the first episode.
From the
of
first episode.
Oh, I just don't remember.
The Risen Mitten.
It's a very forgettable episode.
Right, so I'm getting
it
a divorce.
It does come up again a bit later on in the first
series
as well.
They keep on killing Susie.
Episodes of the first series.
Ah, the joy of not watching Torchwood. Ah.
This close to getting vonked, Leavenfall. Watch your mouth. Watch your step. So
I'm adrift in the...
Actually, no. Vonked. Anyway, it is Jack, Susie, Toshiko, and Owen, and it is a fanon / extended media that Jack puts it on lockdown and refuses, because he never shares anything, he refuses to tell Susie and Toshiko why he's not stopping the big PowerPoint. Not PowerPoint.
PowerPoint.
PowerPoint's deadly. The big nuclear power station. So just for that week, little hub lockdown, and everyone's really annoyed at him for
right,
it.
Right, so he locks them all in and just says, nah.
Yeah, he's like, I'm not from the future because I've not told you that. Whoops-a-daisy. But obviously, Toshiko has already met the Doctor at this point.
Yes.
The fanon explanation for that is that Owen was sick that week. So
I
they send
seen someone say that before. Yeah.
The issue that's really hard with Tortured in particular is that you're never 100% sure if something's fanon or extended media.
I think that is that a general issue or is that a you issue?
It's a general issue because so much of its extended media contradicts each other. The Big Finish beefs the books, and the books beef Big Finish, and they both beef whatever the actors put on Twitter. Don't come for me like that. Me, you, outside.
Because you frequently tell me things about Torchwood and go, I'm not sure if this was just fan fiction or not.
No, this is a fanon and extended media sort of... They shook hands on this one.
Nice.
Joe then asks, what do you think the Torchwood team, including the future Jack, were doing while Remembrance of the Daleks was happening?
It's 1963.
Something about it being 2 years away from Jack and Children of Earth. I don't know what that means.
In Children of Earth, we get little flashbacks of Jack helping to deliver kids to the 456 as part of his role in Torchwood, because up until 2000, Jack was sort of a slave to Torchwood, because he gets kidnapped by the evil Victorian ladies, tortured, killed several times by them because they're quite evil, and then he's forced to work for Torchwood. He doesn't have a choice.
So presumably this is 1965 this happened.
Yeah, which is about 60 to 80 years. We're never 100% sure on dates because, again, extended media beefs all the other media. None of it's consistent. So and this is even prior his wife and his kid, Alice. So
Jack has a wife and a kid?
He had a wife and a kid. Because he has his grandson, Stephen, in Children of Earth, and then he kills his grandson to save the world.
That's wild.
Wow.
Still haven't watched Children of Earth.
It's actually really good. It is. Miracle Day's awful. Don't waste your time. But Children of Earth, as like a short Tortured series, it's really good. Even the killing of Yanto makes sense. I'm sad about it. I really like the character, but it's really good. But yeah, this is even before he was allowed to have a wife and child, so like he's probably not having a great time during this episode. But Jack is also in extended media. Every time the Doctor lands on Earth, Jack like yeets to go meet him. He's like, Doctor, why am I immortal? So maybe he's just on his way to London at this point.
There's nothing suggesting that Jack could have just been there just watching. I mean, there's the whole thing of Jack going to see Rose just randomly. There's nothing wrong with sort of Jack going to London to see key events like Yetis in the underground or...
Because he keeps trying to catch the Doctor. Because he's like, I'm immortal.
And also specifically a version that was in the future of when he met him.
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah, him finding Seven wouldn't really help.
In Utopia, he expressly says, waiting for a version of you that will coincide with me.
Yeah, so maybe he just goes to just hang out.
God, it's just like River Song again. Because there's loads of extended media with River Song that is literally just, hi, I'm the Eighth Doctor, but I don't know you, River Song. I'm going to call you River Song. I'm going to call you something else because we can't we can't interact.
You should watch Torchwood, Ollie. I tried.
I got bored.
No, the first four episodes are bad. You know, they're not the best. But post episode four, it's banger after banger.
I'll watch it at some point.
But back on topic.
Boo! Let me talk about Torchwood.
Jacob has asked, if you could have unlimited anything, what would it be?
Oh, like unlimited rice pudding?
Yes.
Cake.
Earl Grey tea.
I'd have unlimited Bertie.
Oh, you've got unlimited Bertie. That was smooth.
Thank you.
Louis? He's thinking really hard for our audio listeners. He's mouthing something to Ollie.
I'm not sure what he mouthed. I can't lip read.
Yeah, he covered his hands. See. Covered his hand, covered his mouth.
Louis? Do you want to write it down and we can nod or shake our head?
I'm just trying to think of something that I would like in immediate excess. I don't know.
What about you, Harry, while Louis has a crisis?
Chocolate digestives.
Oh, what sort?
The normal ones.
Like milk chocolate?
Yeah, the milk ones.
Branded?
Yeah.
Nice.
I'd like unlimited custard donuts. I always like them.
Yeah.
Okay. I love that we've all gone for like consumable items, not like money.
Well, inflation, I hear, is something that if you have an abundant amount of money,
you can fix.
Let's not get into this right now, Bertie.
Just print more money.
Do you work for the Venezuelan government?
Yes. How did you know?
Joe asks, who among the podcasters would you say could shake their booty the best?
I thought about this.
I think I don't know how this person will take this, but I think Bertie.
So, I was thinking about this. Louis goes out the most out of all of us, which is not saying much because we're all really boring people.
Do you want to start that again?
Hi, my name's Bertie. Welcome to Who's Sock Podcast, where we all got jump scared by Ollie's computer. So, Louis, because you go out more than zero...
Louis is the only one here that I have seen dancing.
Yeah. Though, Harry did drink mysterious alcohol the other week that he didn't know, that came from someone's garage. So I would like to say either Louis, because Louis's just out more, or myself, because I've gone to, like, concerts.
But isn't it, it's not who would do it, it's who would do it best.
Oh, then me.
Yeah.
Louis does it more often.
So you put so much thought into it, but you missed the actual question.
Yeah, okay, I didn't read it. I just, sorry.
You better be.
Fight me.
And finally, Owain asks, they're climbing out the window, aren't they?
Yes.
I don't know if that one opens.
No, it might be locked, actually.
Oh, I think it can, because the monkey that was sort of the symbol of Purple Radio, I think, was in there. Or at least in the
there
other
There was
one.
A monkey so as a symbol for Purple Radio?
There are the awards. The awards are in there as well, in the window.
Oh, so, it's like no, I know, but what are you talking about, a monkey?
I'm sure there was a monkey. I mean, we got the chalkboard monkey, but there was a Purple Radio monkey at one point.
Why a monkey?
That's not a podcast question. That's just a normal question.
What was the normal question? Can we help?
If someone said they'd call you around lunchtime, what times between would you expect the call to come?
11:30 and 2:30.
I would have just said between 12 and 2.
12 and 2 as well.
But to be fair, that's just the same thing as you, but half an hour less on each side.
Yeah. What about you, Harry? What would you think a lunchtime call would be?
Yeah, sort of. Probably 12 till 2, maybe a little bit earlier.
Who asked this question?
Jacob.
Jacob, I hope.
I hope your call went well.
Yeah, this will probably come out in about 3 weeks.
Probably See, more than that.
He asked it at about 1:45, so. I'm guessing he was expecting something that he hadn't gotten.
He probably got it in like the next 15 minutes, hopefully.
It's
now
well.
3:15 for the listeners, so I don't know if Jacob's actually had got this call or not.
Should we ask him?
We could call him.
Oh, we could call Jacob Cook.
Also,
ask him when.
Harry, I think you missed a Lottie question on the Discord.
Is it the one about Davros's dental plan?
Ah, yes, sorry.
Yeah, what is Davros's dental plan?
NHS.
I don't think he has one.
Have we ever seen his teeth?
Yeah, I think they're like metal, aren't they? At least in New Who.
Yeah.
I can't remember. I'll be honest, I don't really care much for his teeth. I more care for more like the evilness and the sort of destruction he is wanting to unleash. However, if he is a good employer, then you know, would. Would Davros encourage his Daleks to join a union?
No. He's
no, he's a dictator.
Episode, the plot of this episode is crushing the unionists.
Hang on, I thought it was about racism.
Wait, no, but the renegades are the unionists. They formed a union and they've unionized against Davros.
No, but Davros...
thank you for listening to Who's Sock Podcast.
That doesn't make sense, because Davros is the one that... No!
Thank you for listening to this Who's Up podcast on Lung Barrow and Torchwood, apparently.
I only take half the responsibility for that.
I've been Harry.
You've been Harry.
Yeah.
What are you now?
What are you now?
This has been a harrying experience.
I mean, for the last hour, I have been your host, Harry.
Hi, I've been Ollie. I still am.
But what are we watching next week?
We don't know yet. Hoosock hasn't decisioned yet.
Currently, World Enough in Time, The Doctor Falls is winning on the poll.
Right.
But when this podcast comes out, everyone will hopefully know what we watched.
Probably watched it by then, yeah.
It might be a TV movie. It might be a couple of Sarah Jane episodes. Mark of the Ride is doing really badly, so sorry, Nick.
Personal apology.
Nick nominated it.
We haven't done
We're also going to be listening to Mind Your Manners.
I've been Bertie. Stay kifty.
Bye, everyone.
Purple Radio Podcasts. Thanks for downloading this Purple Radio podcast. For more great content and to listen live, head to purpleradio.co.uk.